Wasn't humanly possible. But now you can have all the power and excitement of Nintendo right in the palm of your hand. Introducing Game Boy. It's portable, it's in stereo, and its games are interchangeable. Plus, Game Boy comes with the outrageous new game, Tetris. And for head-to-head competition, use the revolutionary video link and blow your opponent away. Game Boy, only from Nintendo. Now you're playing with power, portable power.
What's up? Welcome to Unexpressed, the Nintendo show of GoombaStomp.com. I'm one of the voices, Tim Mason. Here with me is Ricky D.
What's up, Tim Mason? What's up, Nintendo Nation? It's been way too long. Man, I missed the show.
It's crazy how much happens when we don't have a show. Both Sony and Microsoft are announcing new consoles and specs and stuff. It's time for us to get back in there as hardcore Nintendo fanboys and put them back in their place. Tell them to hush up. No one cares. We're talking about the Switch. Patrick Murphy is also here.
I am also here. That's true. Let's talk about the Switch.
Yeah, actually, we are not talking about the Switch. We are talking about the Switch's oldest portable ancestor. That's right. We're celebrating 30 years of the Game Boy this week, which will be really, really fun. I am quite partial to the Game Boy, believe it or not. I don't know if you guys knew that.
I don't know why, Tim. What relationship do you have to the Game Boy whatsoever? I don't make the connection.
Right. Anyway, so we're going to do that later on. We're also going to talk about difficulty in games, which, Rick, I am curious to hear your quick history of how this went down, because you wanted to do this talk spot in response to me talking on my other show.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, so, like, a bit of inside baseball, it has been somewhat tough for us to record a show as of late, and we haven't had many topics to talk about. It's been a quiet time for Nintendo, and so it just kind of felt like the right time.
So before Box Boy and Box Girl comes out?
Right, we're going to get a flood of E3 news, and we're going to get E3, we're going to get a ton of video games being released for Nintendo. I missed out on the Yoshi game, which I think I'm going to pick up on Friday based on hearing you guys discuss it on the last podcast. Especially what you said, Patrick, in your review, it's pretty much what I expected, but I think that's kind of what I need right now. I actually just started Cuphead. They were nice enough to send me a review code. So I'm going to be talking about Cuphead next week, and we're going to have a special guest coming on to help me talk about Cuphead. I also just want to quickly plug the website fun.com, and there's a reason for this. So fun.com actually sent me a box, like a huge box of Pop figures.
What?
Yeah. So okay.
I'm so,
like,
jealous.
So like a while back, remember I was promoting Toink, and they sent me like a bunch of like Zelda action figures and a bunch of like whatever video game collectibles, right? Like it was a lot of Fallout stuff, a lot of like non-Nintendo stuff, but they also sent me some Nintendo stuff. So anyways, fun.com sent me a bunch of they sent me a box, like a huge box of Pop figures. There was like I don't know, there was like 20 Pop figures. They also sent me something else, which I'm not going to talk about today, which is related to Nintendo, which is amazing. It's like more amazing than the season premiere of Game of Thrones season 8. Okay, it's like that incredible. Tune in next week to hear me talk about it. It's related to Nintendo. It's insane. It's so incredible.
Are you gonna post like an opening of this, like, so that we can see what you got at some point?
Yeah. So I'm actually gonna write up an article, which is why I don't want to talk about that today on the podcast, because my article isn't finished. But I did post an article of my 50 favorite Pop figures. Now here's the thing, guys. So when I was growing up, I've always collected things. As we well know, like we talked about this plenty of times on the show, I collect everything. I collect like physical media, which is why I still buy physical copies of video games, right? But when I was a kid, I used to collect everything. I had all of the He-Man figures. I had like 100 G.I. Joes, like you name it, like hockey cards, baseball cards, etc., etc. But when I was a kid, I always wished that like my He-Man figures and my G.I. Joe figures and my Transformers and my GoBots and so on and so forth, I always wished they were like the same size. It's really strange, but like I used to also have those old WWF wrestling figures, but they were like enormous.
Yeah, I had those.
But they were like three times the size of the He-Man figures. Yeah, they're amazing. And so when I was a kid, I used to play with these figures, and I always wished that they were like at least the same size, so it seemed as if they were part of the same universe. And so that's what I like about pop figures. I know a lot of people don't like them, and a lot of people make fun of people that collect them. And I got into it by mistake because a few years ago, I think it was 2 years ago, my niece got me a pop figure of Alex from A Clockwork Orange for Christmas. And the following Christmas, she...
Merry Christmas, everyone!
I know! So she bought me a pop figure again. I can't remember what it was. And then my friend bought me a pop figure for Christmas. I had, like, these three pop figures. And one day I went into the store and I saw Alfred Hitchcock and what's his face from Twin Peaks. So I just started collecting pop figures. Now, I won't collect them all. I only collect the ones that I think look really cool and the characters that I have an affection for, like because I've watched the TV shows or played with the toys growing up or just love the movies. So I have about like 75, which is crazy. But the reason why I bring this up is because I started playing Cuphead, and in that giant box of pop figures that they sent me, a lot of them were video game related. So I got like Crash Bandicoot, for example, but they sent me the whole entire Cuphead collection. And I got to tell you, like on my list that I posted at GoombaStomp.com, the 50 best pop figures, I think I put one, if not two, of the Cuphead figures in that list. Like, I think they're just fantastic. They just look great. They actually look like the characters from the video game. Because sometimes you buy pop figures, and they don't look at all like the character from whatever it is that it's coming from. Like, for example, I wanted to get the Hannibal pop figures, but they just sort of, like, look like dudes. Like, it doesn't even look like Will Graham or Hannibal Lecter. It just looks like a guy in a suit. You know what I mean?
Wait, the TV show Will Graham or the Edward Norton Will Graham or Graham from Manhunter?
The TV show Hannibal,
okay.
Produced and directed by the great Brian Fuller, one of my favorite TV shows of all time. If you haven't watched it, it's incredible. It's also very gruesome and grotesque, so be warned. So anyways, yeah, so shout out to fun.com. Check them out. I'm going to be talking about the other thing they sent me next week, but yeah, do you guys collect pop figures? I don't think
Patrick does. Yeah, no, I have got like 30 plus now. And I had no idea that you collected also. And I also started on accident where it actually was, I was at Comic-Con with the other Game Boys. And we were, one year we were all dressed up as superheroes because we were like going all out. And so we bought the same pop figures of the superheroes that we got. So I got Spider-Man, Ryan got Deathstroke, and Alex got Captain America. And then after that, I was like, oh man, they've got some sweet Star Wars ones. So I started collecting every Stormtrooper, because what else are you going to do? And then I just got hooked. I really like, I do the same thing you do, Rick. If I like it, that's what I get. So I've got like a bunch of Overwatch ones. And mind you, I don't collect every single Overwatch character, just the ones that I like. So all of my favorite heroes from Overwatch, I've got their pop figures. And now I've got some really, really rare collectible ones, including I've got the full Haunted Mansion set from Disneyland. And that's like the pride and joy of my super nerd office room. So
I told this long-winded story about me being a kid wanting all of the figures to seem like they're part of the same universe, and I was trying to get to a point which I didn't get to until now. What I like about the pop figures is they're all roughly the same size and have the same sort of like aesthetic, like the design. And so you can look at Winston from Overwatch and place him next to Cuphead and place him next to Alfred Hitchcock and put them next to the Golden Girls, and they all feel like they're part of the same universe. And that's what I like about pop figures. They actually sent me some Overwatch figures too, and I got Winston, which is probably my favorite. But on my list of the 50 best pop figures ever, I actually put Vito Corleone at the number one spot. And I put Alfred Hitchcock in second place. And I put Jason Voorhees, the special edition, in third place. Yeah, I got some killer rare pop figures that they only released at exclusive events like New York Comic Con, San Diego Comic Con. I think the pop figure I got that's worth the most money is either Biggie Smalls, the Notorious B.I.G., the rapper, or the Joker, but the Killing Joke Joker that was only sold at New York Comic Con. Anyhow, all this to say, what really sucks is they don't have a partnership with Nintendo.
Not yet. No. Right. That bridge is, or I should say that gap is maybe being bridged in that just this month, they released Bulbasaur from Pokemon, and they recently did Pikachu, and they're going to do Charmander and then Squirtle. So, like, yes, I know Pokemon is separate from Nintendo, but hopefully Nintendo sees that, because if they start doing Nintendo pops, it's game over for me. I'm going to buy way too many. It'll be Amiibo all over again. I forgot what they're called. I was like, those scanny things.
So same here, and I'm kind of worried that they might partner with Nintendo, because I'm going to spend way too much money. And speaking of Amiibo, so I have every single Amiibo figure released up until the recent batch, which included like Ash, I think Detective Pikachu, I can't remember. There was like a recent batch that just got released, except for one, the Wii Fit Trainer. And I went on the Best Buy website yesterday, and they're reselling, or they're selling the Wii Fit Trainer again. They're re-releasing it. So I ordered it. So now I'm going to have every single Amiibo figure up until the new batch. And now I got to get the new ones.
Yeah. I mean, collecting, it's cool. It's fun to look at when you've got a nice collection. But boy, is it, it's like you can't stop and you love to do it. But at the same time, it's so aggravating when there's crazy rare ones out there. You have to go through so much extra effort to get them. Like when Nintendo thought it was cool to release a bunch of Link Amiibos at a bunch of different retailers. Just no, Nintendo, don't do it. Guys, come on. Anyway, so that has nothing to do with the topic of our show, but it's coolfun.com. Thank you for sending those to Rick. And I'll give you my address later, Fun, so you can send me all your pops.
I don't know, Tim. I'm going to reach out to them. I'm going to see if they can send you some pops. I mean, the guy was super nice about it, so you never know.
That's really cool. That's a really fun, unexpected sponsorship. Why don't we go ahead and quickly talk about what we've been playing, if we want to do that. If anyone has anything new, and unless we're saving it for next week, Rick and I are playing Cuphead. But then get started with our, I guess, you want to do the celebration first, guys, or we want to do difficulty in games?
Well, in terms of what I've been playing, I've been playing the Game of Thrones. That's all I've been doing. I've been watching seven seasons of Game of Thrones over the past 14 days. I'm on the second last episode of season 7. So I wanted to get it all out of the way before the second episode of season 8. That's what I've been doing. Been too busy to play video games. But next week, guys, I have a lot to talk about in the world of the Nintendo, and specifically the Switch.
Also, look at Goomba Stomp right now. It's got insane coverage of Game of Thrones. It's all everywhere. Game of
Thrones. It's silly. It's silly.
It's disgusting.
So yeah. Surprising to myself anyway, not only beat Yoshi's Crafted World, but I went back and almost 100%ed it. There's some stages that I really just don't like. There's just a couple that I really, really don't like and don't really care for the mechanics. They're always they're these challenge stages that basically you just want to get through because they're not really that much fun to play. There's only about four or five of them, I think. But anyway, so yeah, I almost 100%ed the game, and it's been fun. I enjoyed going back through every world, playing every flip side, and finding everything inside there, and really, you know, digging deep and finding all those flowers, which has been somewhat of a challenge, but it's been good. I just like being in that world. My nieces came over and they loved it. Like, they were super excited about it. It's co-op, and you know, you can put it on easy mode so that they can kind of float through things. That's mostly what I've been playing, and of course, you know, still going through Hollow Knight again. But yeah, otherwise, I've been kind of like Rick, though. I've been, except with the Twilight Zone. So the new Twilight Zone series is out, which I am reviewing, and I just watched the latest episode. The latest disappointing episode tonight. I keep hoping the show is going to find itself, but it hasn't yet. But in the meantime, I'm also going through the entire first season of the original series so that I'll be writing a feature later this month There's a different number of episodes. I think this new season, the 2019 version, has about 8 initial episodes in its first season. There are 36 in the original first season, so it's quite a bit to go through. But I'm going to try to contrast the overall tone and feel and some of the important elements of each episode and what makes this new season kind of so far disappointing to me. Why I think its writers don't really understand the original Twilight Zone, at least not yet, at least 4 episodes in, which is about halfway through. I don't think they quite get what made the original series special. And I'm going to try to point that out by comparing the 2 first seasons. Anyway, that's what I've been working on.
You should tune into Before the Internet. It's a podcast that I run. We record once or twice a month, and a few of the upcoming shows will be a spotlight on the Twilight Zone, in which, of course, Patrick will be guest hosting with me, and we're going to be doing an episode looking back at Game of Thrones, all 8 seasons. Of course, that's way into the future after season 8 has finished airing.
Yeah, I definitely think that the scariest Twilight Zone episode is the one where George R.R. Martin dies before he finishes.
Does it even matter anymore, the books? Do they?
Not if the show finishes, probably not.
It's over. The show has taken over, I think, the books. I know there are people out there who really love the books, and I know they really want them to finish the books. But at this point, culturally, like, once the show ends, and the ending's going to be different than the books, but it's still, that's going to be the definitive ending, I think. And whatever happens in the book,
he full on just was like, oh, you can have this ending, I'll do a different one.
Yeah.
What is that?
Like, so I don't think it really matters how he ends the books anymore. The show is going to finish the whole story off. Like, that'll be the definitive ending, I think.
Right. So, bringing this back to Nintendo, I have an
idea. I was
going
to say, welcome to N-Express, where we talk about anything but Nintendo this week.
I mentioned Yoshi.
Wait, it's going to be Linked?
Well, look, I have an idea. I've been jotting down my ideas, but I've been contemplating if I should do this or not. I was thinking about doing a really quick fluff piece in which I take Nintendo characters and decide what they would be if they were in the world of Game of Thrones. So, for example, who would be Jon Snow? Who would be Lady Stark? Do you guys think I should do it? Maybe we can talk about it next week.
Yes.
Yeah?
I think that would be great. I haven't seen the show. Oh my gosh, Tim, you and I are like unicorns. But we found each other, people who don't watch Game of Thrones.
I already know King Joffrey is. It's Ronan from Fire Emblem Warriors.
I do know that he does look exactly like Joffrey. I've seen that meme.
I know enough of the characters, so I'll at least know what you're talking about, because I did see like the first 6 or 8 episodes of the first season before I stopped watching. But so I'll at least be aware of some of the characters, but, you know, probably not all of them.
All right, I'm gonna put my Photoshop skills to the test.
Yeah, I think that would be fun.
I'm gonna try to do it this week. I'll publish it before the next podcast. Next week's show, man, I'm so hyped for next week's show. Today's show is gonna be good. Next week's show is gonna be amazing.
We're not gonna tease anymore with next. Well, no, maybe we will later on. But for now, we're gonna take a quick break. Then we're gonna actually get into the show and talk about Nintendo. So don't go anywhere.
The adult world is designed to keep us moving. And while this may make us more efficient, it's not exactly a party. Luckily, technology has produced a cure. It's called a Game Boy, the personal game-playing system from Nintendo, with lots of sports, action, and puzzle games to choose from. And it comes with a puzzle game Tetris. It could change your outlook.
I'm sorry, sir. Your flight's been delayed.
Cool.
Game Boy by Nintendo. Have you had your fun today?
Welcome back to N-Express. We're at our middle segment, a discussion of difficulty in games. What is the right spectrum? How do you find out what's the proper balance to strike between too difficult, too easy, Yoshi versus Sekiro? Where do things go right and where do things go wrong? This conversation is coming after Game Boys had a ranting discussion about difficulty in games after the internet decided that Sekiro should have an easy mode for accessibility for all gamers to be included. I played devil's advocate and said, maybe not. And then in the end kind of shrugged it off and said, whatever, I don't really care. But Rick, you were listening to that episode and you wanted to bring it to this show. So tell me why.
Why what? What exactly are you asking?
Yeah, why do you personally want to have the discussion of difficulty beyond to share your own opinions? Because you have, in case no one's ever heard N-Express or any of Ricky's other shows, Rick has opinions and he'll let you know them.
I think that the whole conversation got blown out of proportion, which is not surprising because you're talking about the video game world and the internet, right? But from my understanding, and I could be wrong, a lot of people are trying to bring up a point that it would be nice if some of these games had an easier mode for people who had, say, like a disability and they couldn't play a game that's like super hard for whatever reason. I've read and heard a lot of arguments that say, no, there's no reason for this specific game or that game to have an easy mode. It is made the way it is because that's how the developers wanted to make it. Fine. But I just feel like on one side of the spectrum, the people who say that a game like Sekiro should only have a hard mode, I have not yet heard an argument that justifies why a game can't just have an option. Like, it's just like, it just seems like a bunch of people who treasure From Software and the games they make, and they feel that for whatever reason, by having an option where you can switch it from hard to medium to easy, would ruin their experience and ruin the game, which to me doesn't make any sense, because if the option is there and you never turn it on, it's like it's not there. It's like it does not change the game that you set out to play, which is the way the game was intended to be made, with the difficulty mode being set at hard. And that's what I don't understand. So I'm not saying that a company like From Software has to give the option. It's up to them. It's up to them as the developer and the creators, and they have an artistic vision, and maybe that's the way they specifically want to make a game. That is fine. But I don't think that there is anything wrong with someone saying or wishing that it did have an easy mode, or that they can change the settings of the difficulty, much like a game like Celeste. Because at the end of the day, like, it would be nice if some people could experience a game from start to finish because they just want to experience the game, but can't for whatever reason. And I always think back to one of my favorite games of all time, Zelda 2, The Adventure of Link, which was released on the Nintendo Entertainment System way back in the day and was so incredibly hard that very few people beat the game. I was one of the people that beat that game, and it's one of my favorite games of all time. And I always say that if you finish the game, if you can somehow make it to the end of the game, you're going to appreciate that game. But most people just hate the game because they never made it to the end of the game, and I totally understand why. And that's a problem with the actual design of the game, specifically with the combat system. And it's a shame because I think that if you finish the game from start to finish, you will have a different appreciation from the game. Would you love it as much as me? Maybe not, but I think you can appreciate more than if you just made it like a quarter of the way through. And so, like, I don't know, because I was listening to you, Tim, and you said something on the podcast, on the Game Boys podcast, and you talked about the artistic vision of the game developers. But, like, how can you or anybody else say what the artistic vision of those game developers are? And does changing the difficulty really change anything about their artistic vision? I don't think so. Like, maybe, but I don't think so. Like, I don't think it changes the visuals. It doesn't change the soundtrack or the music or the lighting or the animation or anything, because the hard mode is still there. What they set out to do, it's still there in the game, regardless if you have an option to make it easier or not. So it's still there.
I think that their original concept, though, was bringing gaming back to its roots and bringing it back to the Zelda 2 level of difficulty, where there are countless people who just quit outright. And then there are people like you and me, Rick, who grin and bear it and make it through. And I have a way deeper appreciation for the game in the long run because we committed to it. And just one weekend, we're like, we're going to get through this. I think that that's kind of the concept that they went in back in with Demon's Souls and Dark Souls and everything since. And I think that to some extent, that might be lost, that sort of playground sensibility where you and your friends are chatting about this game and two out of three people quit and that one person is like, no, I beat it. And then they're kind of a hero for it. I think that there's something to be said about preserving that. And I think there are people that really like the shared pain aspect of those games. Like, I can't help but think that some people on Goomba Stomp are legitimately insane. There's a discussion about Sekiro, and I want to say it was Mike recently said that he finally beat the final boss, and it took him 10 hours just to beat one boss. And it's like this weird, sick pride where they're like, yeah, it was really hard. I got through it. This is how long it took me. And it's
that's not a good reason to exclude millions of people because of Pride. And the thing is, like, what I'm saying, Tim, is that it doesn't take away from that experience. If you still want to experience the game in that hard difficulty mode, the way it was intended to be played by the game developer, regardless if there's an option to switch or not, you can still do it. It doesn't change anything. That there's a difference between 2019, and 1984, when it would be too troublesome and they didn't have enough resources, or the technology just wasn't there for them to include various difficulty modes in a game like Battletoads or Zelda 2 The Adventure of Link or Mega Man 2. We're 2019. There's no excuse to not have the options for people that can't play it. And so, again, that's not a good enough reason. And from the people who say that it should only have a hard mode, I still have not yet heard an actual good reason as to why.
Here's the thing. We're also missing. There's a big part of this conversation that has been missing from all these people complaining, and that's why are people complaining? I keep hearing like, "Oh, the game is so perfectly balanced." Blah 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 bullshit. I'm sure it's balanced for some people. I think a lot of these conversations, like Tim, when you bring up like, "Okay, we powered through it. We committed." There's a sense of pride there. There's skill involved, and there are some people who simply, no matter how hard they try, won't be able to beat it. And so why are they complaining about this and not necessarily like some puzzle game that they can't solve, right? Because there's plenty of puzzle games out there that are too hard for people. And I think they're complaining about this because games have started to become far more than they were in the NES days. People didn't complain so much about Zelda 2 The Adventure Link or Ninja Gaiden or anything like that. They were hard, but now games are all, they've become much bigger medium for storytelling, and people consume a lot of stories in video games now. And I think if you've paid $60 to experience this world and then find out that there is a physical component to this, a requirement that you can't meet, and now you're not going to get to experience this world and this story that you just paid for, I think people feel burned. And it's not like when you buy a book or you watch a movie, because there's no impediment to you seeing the entire movie. You might not like it, you might get bored, and you might turn it off, but that's your choice. That's totally different. There's a big difference between not liking a game and not being able to play the game.
Yeah, and you got to remember that even with a puzzle game, like even if you're not great at solving puzzles, you can always turn to the internet and find the solution, find the answer, right?
That's correct.
And I've done it many times in playing video games where I just could not solve a puzzle and I would turn to the internet. I would look at a walkthrough or a guide or a YouTube video and I would be able to solve the puzzle and move forward. But you can't do that when it comes to physical limitation.
It's like not everybody's going to make it to the major leagues, no matter how hard some people practice. They could practice every day for the rest of their lives and they still don't have the innate physical ability to make it to the major league baseball. Some people just aren't going to be able to beat some of these hard games, and that's why they feel burned on them, because until difficulty is all subjective, and you can read a review that says this game is difficult, but what does that mean to you? You don't know the person who's writing the review or what their version of difficult is. So you kind of have to wing it, and then you pay for this thing that you can never see through to the end. And I think that makes a lot of people mad. And I do want to say this really quick before I let you go. I am 100% with it for designers and developers being able to do whatever they want. If you want to make a hard game, that's your problem. And if the sales are lower because of that, that's whatever. Like, you stay true to your vision and that's fine. But I do understand the complaints. And I think that's the problem that we're having from a lot of people who are trying to argue against difficulty modes, is that they don't understand the complaints at all. Mostly because they can actually perform the functions necessary to beat these things. For the people who can't, that sucks.
But that's the thing, because like for them, they feel like it's an exclusive club. Like, they should be the only people that enjoy this game because they are the only ones that are good enough to get to the end. And that's kind of childish. That's not even childish. That's just...
It's elitist.
Thank you. That's the word I'm looking for. But the thing is, it's like you can play Super Mario Brothers, the original game, and you can challenge yourself and get through the whole entire game without, say, dying or beat like the record for the how fast you can beat the game. I mean, there's a reason why we have speedruns. You know what I mean? Like, speedruns are all about players challenging themselves to beat world records, be it on Tetris to Super Mario Brothers or Dark Souls. And so there's still different ways to challenge yourself and to make the game more difficult. And all I'm saying is, yes, it's fine it's absolutely fine within their right for From Software to make a game that they want to release that only has one difficulty setting. And that's fine. But there's a lot of game developers that have come forward, like the director of God of War or the director of Celeste. And they said that changing or actually giving the option for a player to change the difficulty level does not change their artistic vision in any which way at all.
Resident Evil 4 has an adaptive difficulty level. The game, it doesn't tell you that, but it senses if you're having problems. And if you start dying on a particular thing over and over and over again, it starts removing enemies and it starts making them less aggressive. So it never actually tells you that, but it tries to like balance to your ability, which is something that's another option. You don't even have to necessarily give. If somebody's very good at something, just let it continue to be hard for them. But if the game notices that you're constantly dying on a certain enemy or boss or whatever, it can. Resident Evil 4 was very good at adapting to that.
Yeah, and by the way, I'm playing Sekiro on, well, I mean, I'm playing it the way it's intended to play it because I can't change the difficulty setting. And I'm playing through it. I'm going to hopefully one day maybe finish the game. But I mean, I also come on the podcast and complain about a game like Kirby being a little too easy. You know what I mean? So it goes both ways. Like, I kind of wish that some of those games had a difficulty setting also. But even with a game like Yoshi, we've said this time and time again, like, finishing the game isn't hard, but 100% completing the game is hard.
That's the thing. There's a big difference because that you can still, at least you can complete Kirby. Like, you might say that it's too easy, but there are all sorts of little ways that you can challenge yourself. But at least you can beat it. And I think when people pay for a product, they want to see it through to the end. And like I said, I think the story aspect is a big component here because people are now used to getting their stories through video games. It's such a big deal now. And even though I personally don't care about stuff like that, a lot of people do. And if they get cut off, can you imagine if you were watching a movie and then all of a sudden halfway through you were required to input a series of buttons with like bizarre reflex component, and then if you didn't do it correctly, that was it. The movie was over and you would never be able to get to see the second half of the movie unless you were able to input those button sequences correctly. Like, people would be furious.
Especially if it was for like something like Star Wars or,
yeah,
Avengers.
Or Avengers. Right?
People like, would burn down cinemas.
They burn down the movie theaters. And so this is where this anger is coming from, I think, is because somebody starts a game like this, they're getting really engrossed in it, and then all of a sudden, boom, it's like, nope, you can't go any further because you're not good enough. Guess you'll never see the end or you'll
but
have
like to... The online commentary for the entire Soulsborne series has been get good. Like, that's kind of part of it. The thing that I'm really hesitant about is... I personally, again, I like to play devil's advocate with this issue because is this really worth your time? I get that some people maybe spent money on it and felt burnt, but like, can I be brutally honest and say this is the maker of Demon Souls, Dark Souls, and Bloodborne? This serves you right. Like, you should have known. If you didn't know what you were getting,
say you were new, Tim.
Dude, no. That Starbucks cop, it says the coffee is hot.
No.
I don't care how new again, you are.
Subjective.
I don't care how new you are.
Like,
that
what is hard?
Thing is hard. I didn't buy it because I knew it was goddamn hard. If you didn't, you are new.
You're not listening. Subjective. You're talking about something subjective. The game. And what if you never played or even heard of? What if you're a kid who never heard of Dark Souls?
Saw that this game called Sekiro and bought it?
And it looked cool. That's how people used to buy games all the time.
I know. So again, serves you right. We got burnt all the time. We got burnt constantly.
No, we did. But
yes,
again,
Tim,
back then, no, we didn't. If a game was hard, see, back then we looked at games. In the NES days, you looked at games as games. Not storytelling devices, games. But the problem is now games are so focused on this, they've dipped their toes, more than dipped their toes, they've waded into the waters of storytelling, and they've made themselves and touted themselves as a storytelling medium. And so a lot of people, that's what they now consider games to be, is another storytelling medium, only this is a story you may never finish. Back in the NES days, it was a game. It was like playing ping pong and losing. Like, whatever, I lost the game. I couldn't beat Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. There was no story. It was not really. It was like you didn't get involved or wrapped up in the world of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. You tried to play it as a game. And okay. If you failed, you failed. It was like, oh, I didn't get any hits today at the baseball game. Well, that sucked.
From Software released a game that they wanted to release, and there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. Like, they're within their right. But what I don't understand is why people are so upset that some people just wish that the game had a difficulty setting. Yeah. Like, I don't think there's anything wrong with someone saying, hey, I really wish I can play this game and finish it, but I can't because I'm not good enough. That's fine. Like, I don't think people have to make them feel bad about themselves. And but I think that's a problem with the internet. It's like all of these people are just making people feel bad about themselves and insulting them just because they can't finish a video game.
That's get good.
Yeah, but maybe they can make it to outer space and fly a rocket ship or an aircraft or do better things, like save a life because they're a doctor.
That's worth doing. Pursuing those things is worth it. A video game, putting all this anger and effort towards a video game is never, ever worth it.
Except the fact that the anger is coming from the people who are upset about people just saying that they just wish it had a setting. And that's the thing. The anger isn't coming from the people who wish it had a setting. The anger is from the people who are good enough to finish the game.
No, I feel like it's the internet deciding. To me, I read the scenario as the internet is getting self-righteous and indignant and knocking at the door from saying, you got to make an easy mode for these people. And it's not in the internet's place to approach a developer if the developer doesn't want to do that. I think.
It is, though, Tim. That's community feedback. There's nothing wrong with people saying to developer, we wish you had an easy mode for this. No, the developer doesn't have to do that.
Demanding it as a bunch of entitled children, though, is where I draw the line. And I feel for too many people, I'm seeing the entitlement creep up where it's, I want to be able to beat this game. If you have a disability and you can't play the game, then I understand creating features so that you can play a game like this. For the person that's like, oh, I just want to be able to beat this, like,
wait, what's the difference?
There's because a huge difference in that thing. Like,
I find that very interesting. The people like will if you have a disability and it's harder for you to push the buttons in the right way, people are much more accommodating. But if you don't have an obvious disability yet still can't push the buttons in the right way because you're not physically gifted or mentally gifted, because everybody has different reaction times, everybody has different reflexes, and some people simply will never be able to do this no matter how hard they try. And yet they are looked on as seeming like they're entitled and they want this thing, whereas people will accommodate the other people that can't push the buttons right. What's the difference? If you there can't no do difference. It, you can't do it. And it doesn't matter whether you no matter what, that's an innate disability. It's just that one of them is outward, one of them's not.
The bottom line is, it's 2019. Like, there is no reason for people to want to have options when developers can make the options. And the thing is, all of this started specifically because a few people wrote a few opinion pieces. I think the first one that really blew up was the guy at, I think, Forbes magazine. And the internet just, like, flipped out because they're like, who the hell is this guy that says that there should be a difficulty setting for a game that From Software makes? But who are you to tell From Software, tell us what kind of games they should make? Like, what if their next game, they want to put that setting there? Is the internet, those people are just going to freak out. They're going to freak out no matter what.
But at that point, From made their decision, and I think they should be entirely entitled to make that decision. They made the game. They can make it however they want. If they want to make a movie, if they want to make a movie and make it exclusively Japanese and refuse to make subtitles for it, and that's on the viewer. We don't care. It's just in Japanese. This is a scenario I'm just making up. I don't know that this has ever happened. If they wanted to do that, though, I feel like they should be entitled to do that. And I think it's a slippery slope, guys.
I totally 110% agree with that. I don't feel like anything needs to be demanded of people, but I also don't blame people for wanting.
There's nothing wrong with starting a conversation because this is no different than fans talking to Nintendo because they want a specific character in Smash, or they want Nintendo to do something with Mario, or they want Nintendo to add something to Zelda. I mean, this happens all the time, no matter who the developer is, no matter what the game series is. But for some reason, when it came to the difficulty, it just like was like the end of the world for the video game industry. It just doesn't make any sense. Like, how is this any different? Like, if people are having a conversation and From Software is included in that conversation because they are addressing their wants, like their wish list of what they can have, and they want a difficulty setting in these games, I don't think there's anything different about that than wanting your next Star Wars game to be single player or wanting a specific weapon in your next Overwatch.
Because there is a very real avalanche effect when the community gets involved. Every single time when the community speaks up and heckles someone into submission, then there is just a whole cascading effect that will, for better or worse, impact the rest of the industry. And for a single player game where people want to enjoy the narrative, I will reiterate, I actually do not give a crap. Make the game easier, whatever, it does not matter. I don't care about the shared pain aspect. I don't care about the masochists out there who want to hurt themselves with really, really difficult gameplay. Where I do get really, really concerned is in who this impacts afterwards. I do not want a world where people are so entitled that every game gets easier, even the competitive games get easier and more approachable because of one really hard game getting toned down. Does that make sense? That's where I'm cautious.
It does make sense, but there's a huge difference between, say, demanding a specific character be put in a game or a specific weapon and just asking for them to acknowledge that some people can't finish these games and to maybe consider adding a difficulty setting in the future. Like, there's a huge difference because, again, it doesn't change the actual game for you playing it on hard mode. It is still there. That is the point I'm trying to make. It does not change anything in the world if there is an option. Hands down.
Look at something like Bayonetta 2, right? Where I played that game on very easy the entire time, and I had a blast. There are a lot of people making the argument that, like, oh, if Sekiro had an easy mode, you just wouldn't understand, you wouldn't get it as much, or you wouldn't enjoy it as much, as if they actually know what other people will enjoy.
And
Bayonetta 2, yes, for the hardcore fans, still has super hard modes. Like, there's nothing toned down about it. If you're super skilled, I am not, then you can go through that game and you can achieve more than I can, but I still got to play through it my way and I had a blast doing it.
And see, that is fine. And again, is a single player game. Yeah. I only actually am combating this because, again, these things have a bad way of affecting the entire industry, and I do not want content creators who are making multiplayer games, competitive games, to think that this necessitates action where it doesn't belong. I think that in a competitive setting, it's supposed to separate the good from the bad, from the, you know what I'm saying? Like,
well, matchmaking does that though, right? To a certain extent.
But when, I mean, forgive the quote, but in the infamous words of Buddy from The Incredibles, once everyone's special, no one is. And I just don't, I do not want to see that come to competitive gaming, but it's going to.
Do you actually think that Sekiro, by adding a difficulty mode, would affect the entire video game industry? Like, consider this. You're playing a game like Fortnite. It's huge. It's a phenomenon. Hundreds of millions of people play this game worldwide. You probably have like 100 million of these kids that aren't good enough to actually compete and make it far enough into the game. How do you know a company like Epic doesn't have some sort of like AI that looks at a player's progress and how fast and quick that player dies and actually rigs the game so it puts these characters in a game that aren't actual players, they're AIs that are designed to play poorly so it makes you a better player so you will keep on playing Fortnite? Because if it was as difficult as Sekiro, you would probably just give up and move on to the next game, and Fortnite wouldn't be the biggest game in the world it is right now. That is what a lot of companies are doing. So, like, I don't understand how you think by adding a difficulty mode in a game like Sekiro is going to change a whole entire video game industry.
What if Epic is watching and they're like, oh, more people will play our games if it's easier? And so they put a really cheesy gun. Let's go back to Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2, where everyone could play that game because a lot of the guns were just cheesier. It was, like, an easier game to play, so more people could excel at it. There was too many combos that were just cheese. And that's bad design. And I'm afraid that with too many people looking intently at this, that's where I'm afraid that this comes in.
Your case doesn't hold water because we're talking about something in that case that actually does affect the gameplay for other people. But this is a single player game. If I played on easy and you play on hard, my playing it on easy isn't going to affect you or anyone else in this world. The world's not going to burn down. We're going to continue living.
But it is naive. But I get it.
Tim's just afraid that it'll carry over. Exactly. He understands
it is.
But let me try to lay that fear.
That there's not an avalanche effect. Once one thing changes, everything changes. It's naive to think that it won't.
No, I don't think that that's necessarily true. You have to look at the kind of games that people are complaining about. And again, I cannot underestimate or cannot say this enough. The story and the world building plays a huge part in all of this. Now, you don't get that as much in competitive gaming. Now, maybe with some you do, but for the most part, I think that's not why people are playing competitive games. It's why you don't hear people complaining about Super Meat Boy, you know, or other challenging, more challenging platformers, you know, that maybe people can't beat. Maybe they are frustrating to some people, but you don't hear about them complaining about those as much because I don't think there's a story involved in that is as engrossing as these other big games are. So I don't know that it's necessarily going to carry over into competitive gaming because I don't think that's what people are playing those games for. I think you're seeing the complaints from these story-based games because that's what they're playing those games for.
So why does Nintendo go back to its roots and the next Zelda game will be hard as shit? Because the original Zelda game was hard if you didn't have a walkthrough or a map or anybody to tell you how to finish the game and find the things you needed to finish the game. And the second Zelda game was like one of the hardest games, if not the hardest game on the NES. So maybe Nintendo should just go back to its roots, like From Software, and bring back that feel of what it was like to play a game on like a super hard mode that 99% of people couldn't finish it. Why doesn't Nintendo just do it? Let's do it. I mean, would that make everyone happy?
Some people did find Breath of the Wild to be difficult. Like, people died far more often in that game than they died in past Zelda games. So
yeah, but you don't have to restart all over like you did in Zelda 2, where it brings you right back to the middle of the map.
But Nintendo is From Software, and nobody expects that from them. They're not making Mario isn't Super Meat Boy. You know, like, it's not quite the same. They can provide challenge, and Nintendo smartly, I think, provides their challenges in other ways. When you look at Kirby, when you look at Yoshi, when you look at Mario, it's always about trying to get with Mario. You can usually get through the game collecting a certain number of stars or moons or whatever, right? But then there's the playing every level and getting every star or moon on every level. That is really, really hard. That can be really, really hard. Like Super Mario 3D World was pretty tough at the end there. And I couldn't do it. I think you did, Rick, and I know Mike Warby did, and like some other people, but I couldn't do it, and I never felt burned because I was able to play through all the rest.
Couldn't do what? What are we talking about?
Play the last level on Super Mario World, 3D World.
Oh my God! Yeah, I finished the game.
Yeah, I couldn't. I wasn't good enough to get through that level, or at least I didn't want to take the time to.
That's
maybe,
just it.
Maybe I never would have been able to, but I never felt burned because I could get through the main game, and then I could play a lot of the extra content. And I always felt like the extra content in Nintendo games is it's up to you how much you want to do, right? You can just sort of go to your skill level. As long as the game is entertaining, you'll keep trying. And once you start hitting your head into a wall, you'll stop, most likely. And that's the perfect way to do it.
Some of my favorite games of all time are like super hard. I'm like the biggest fan of the old Mega Man games, Mega Man 2, Mega Man 4, The Adventure of Link, Zelda 2, and most recently Salt and Sanctuary. Love that game. And I had no problem playing these games that were difficult, even though I would die and die and die over and over again. And eventually I would just find a way to beat the boss or whatever, make it to the end of the game. All I'm saying to end this conversation is I don't think there's anything wrong with anybody wanting an option. That's it. I don't think there's anything wrong with options. I've said this so many times on a podcast. Options are great.
Yeah, I agree. I 100% support any developer's right to make a game how they want because it's their money, their project, and it's going to be their sales. They're going to be ones that reap the benefits or get hurt by it. But I also think that it's kind of all the people saying that a game will be changed or whatever, it won't change a thing. Like, you can make something easier for other people and it won't change the core experience for the people that want to keep it on the regular way. It's just, it won't. Balance, all balancing issues, blah, blah, blah. There's very simple ways to make something easier for somebody. And the people that don't want to do it, they can go on with their lives and play it the regular way.
And thanks to Rick for bringing it to Nintendo. I'm going to end with, I do not care. Do whatever you want to your single-player games. More people, the merrier. I just do not want a world where it's more impacted in competitive play. I mean, Rick, you brought it back to Nintendo. Look at Mario Kart. You suck at that game. You get blue shells and lightning like mad. So I just do not want that to happen to the rest of the gaming industry as a whole. I think it's a slippery slope. So I sincerely hope that people are understanding that this is a concept for single player games and not bringing it to competitive, because people should feel good playing an online shooter or what have you. I think for some games, you just have to play well and play well against others.
Well, look at Smash. I mean, you have options. You don't have to include the Smash Ball. You don't have to include items. Like, I love that. I love having options, but sometimes I want to include them.
But you have to concede that that does add a layer of randomness that can favor a less skilled player.
Which is fine, but you have the option to turn them off.
Exactly. But I'm just saying.
Options.
Yeah. Anyway, where do you stand on the issue of difficulty? Let us know. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, the Game Boy. Don't go anywhere.
As Nintendo begins to take on new forms, it's important that we can measure how addictive they truly are.
The new Game Boy Micro. Extremely portable. Extremely stylish.
Welcome back to NXpress. We're at our final segment, a celebration of the Game Boy, which is turning 30 this Sunday, the 21st of April, which is incredibly exciting. It's insane to think that this console is that old. It really does not feel like it to me. I don't know how you guys feel.
Yeah, released on April 21st, 1989. Do you know how many units it sold on the first day?
I have no idea.
Well, I'm talking about North America here. So it sold 40,000 units the day it came to North America, day one, which is a lot. Yeah. Overall,
this was the peak of like NES hype too.
Yeah, overall it sold 120 million units. That includes a Game Boy Color. And yeah, like it actually had a lot of competition at the time. Because there was the Sega, what was it called? The Sega Gearbox?
The Game Gear, something like that.
I wasn't
which was in color.
Exactly, it was in color. And the whole thing about the Game Boy was that obviously there was no color. And a lot of people say that that's the big problem with the original Game Boy. It's the actual screen. It features four levels of gray to augment the lack of backlighting. And I mean, I was never a big fan of the way it actually looked. Like, who wouldn't want a full-colored like Game Boy? But they eventually did give us a full-colored Game Boy. So it didn't display bright, shiny colors. We also had to use, I think it was four AA batteries, if I'm not mistaken, which is a lot. A lot of batteries.
The reason it didn't, they didn't have color is because the battery life was so much longer. People who had a Game Gear, I remember kids that had a Game Gear, they were ultimately disappointed because it wouldn't play that long.
Well, the Game Boy used to last up to about 30 hours.
It was crazy. System, yeah, it was awesome.
But still, like 30 hours of gaming, you're going through four AA batteries. So imagine how much you spend on batteries per year.
Oh, a ton. But at the same time, like you could go on a road trip and not have to worry about constantly replacing your batteries.
Oh, by the way, there was also the Atari Lynx.
Yes, that was that's right. Yeah. That was out of this world, though, for like, that was for rich kids.
Yeah, so there was the Atari Lynx, the Sega Game Gear, and the Game Boy all on the market. And I think one of the reasons why the Game Boy kind of like just ran away with it, well, there's two reasons. Number one, something we talked about a few weeks ago, Tetris. Mm-hmm. And number two, I think it was also the price range.
Yes, cheaper. And yeah, it was a lot easier for parents to spend their money on that for their kids than it was for the Game Gear or the Lynx, for sure.
Also, the screen, the actual size of it, 2.5 inch, a lot of kids were able to like hold it, actually pocket it. It was just easier to travel with the Game Boy. It wasn't like huge.
I think we're ignoring, like, it also had games that just appealed to adults. You know, Tetris was something that sold not only to kids, and Game Gear didn't really have something like this, neither did Lynx. But there are a lot of adults that love Tetris and bought a Game Boy specifically just for that game and may have never played anything else.
I've gone on record to say that Tetris is like the greatest launch game of all time. I mean, that game pretty much put the Game Boy on the map, put Nintendo on the map when it came to handheld consoles. And I look at where they are now with the Nintendo Switch.
I think that you're exaggerating. What about 1-2 Switch?
Oh, come on.
Pretty good, but not quite as good.
You could argue that Tetris helped the Game Boy sell well at the start. But then it was games like Super Mario and Pokemon that really kept the Game Boy in the hands of gamers, young gamers, moving forward over Pokemon, the years.
Especially, even more than Mario. Because Super Mario Land, I don't know. Okay, so Rick, you obviously own a Game Boy. I had a Game Boy as a kid. Tim, did you have a Game Boy? You're younger than us. I'm not sure if... Or do you have a color?
I never owned the Game Boy. I talked about this on a podcast. No. My best friend had a Game Boy, and he used to lend me his Game Boy all the time. And I used to play mostly Tetris, but he lived next to me. So it's kind of like I had a Game Boy, but I never actually owned a Game Boy.
Tim strikes me as a Game Boy Advance generation guy.
Patrick, my family and I had two bricks, two Game Boy Pockets, and that's one Game Boy Color.
I never had the fancy Game Boy or Game Boy Colors. I had the brick. That was what I had.
So funny story about the brick, and this is a true story. I actually told this to Nintendo when I applied there one time. My mom was basically forced to buy me my own Game Boy Pocket when that became an option, because I used to hide the Game Boy and Link's Awakening from my brothers so that only I could play it.
You know what's crazy about the Game Boy? Like, we look at the Switch now, and this was Nintendo's first big portable system, and it was huge. It was such a success. Like I said, 120 million units sold. But it was a system that, like the Switch, did not care about the technical powerhouse of, say, the competition. Like, it didn't care about the specs and the power. It was just specifically a gaming system that was meant to be portable, cheap, and fun to play. And it's been proven the formula for Nintendo moving forward. Like, that's what they need to rely on. It's all about the games. And yeah, it's just such an influential, like, video game console. It's amazing. Like, 30 years later, people still play it. It still works. If you have a Game Boy, it still works.
Yeah, I remember there being this famous, like, Nintendo Power, because I had Nintendo Power when I was a kid. And there was, like, this photo of this Game Boy, like, somebody's house burned down, and the Game Boy was just melted. But the kid booted it back up, and it still played video games. It was like the screen was intact, but the plastic had all, like, melted into a glob. But the everything still played. And I remember that picture. That picture has stuck with me. Nintendo Power as being one of those things where the hardware was built so strong that it lasted through a fire.
So the Game Boy, there was a Game Boy that survived an explosion, a bombing in the war.
Yeah.
But then there was someone that took the Game Boy into space. I think that's where I get my... But regardless, whatever. The thing is, like, solid, like a brick. It's like, that's why they called it a brick, the gray brick.
I think it's important to notice, like, or to note for a kid back then. And yeah, there were some handheld sort of gaming devices-ish. Like, the Game Boy was the first one, though. It came out before the Game Gear, I believe, and before the Lynx. But it was pretty incredible. Like, the NES was still kind of a fad. It was in the peak of its, like, popularity. And a lot of kids had one, but video games were still pretty new to most people. And I think it's hard to understate just how incredible it was to be able to play something like this in your hands, because we were more used to the Game and Watch type stuff back then. And there were a lot of different companies that made Game and Watch style games. Just these little ones where there wouldn't be any animation. It would just be kind of a LCD blip across the screen. And I had a lot of those. And, you know, like, some of them were even kind of big, and they tried to emulate mini arcade cabinets. And, you know, they were cheap, and I'd get them for birthdays and stuff like that. But it was incredible to be able to play a fully animated video game. Didn't matter if it was in black and white. It was just the fact that it was able to move, like the one that I saw on my TV. And, you know, this was in an age where a portable television would have been an amazing thing, right? Like anybody that had a portable television, it was like a myth. Like, you wanted to see that thing. So the Game Boy was like this little mini portable TV that you got to play video games on. And that was really, really incredible, I think, to most people back then. Another reason why it sold so much, it was a technological leap forward in entertainment media.
I think that comparatively, we have the NES, which kind of revitalized the gaming industry and is so synonymous with home gaming that parents and people used to just call home consoles Nintendos, right? Mm-hmm. That's the environment that the Game Boy came into. And so I think it makes sense that when you came to the DS or the 3DS and the other consoles from Nintendo that aren't necessarily Game Boys, why people still call them Game Boys. Like, Nintendo so solidified the market with this thing, and the NES before it becoming the Nintendo home console, right? Like, it became so solidified, everyone had one, that I think it makes sense that, like, everyone had one. You had Tetris, you had, like, Mario games on the go, that experience, basically that experience from the NES on the go. It makes sense that the Game Boy was such a huge success.
I also think the design plays a huge part in the success along with games like Tetris, because the actual Game Boy itself, like if you think about the D-pad controller and the four buttons, A, B, start, and select, it pretty much mirrored the control of the Nintendo Entertainment System, which at the time was the most popular video game system on the market. And so it was easy for people to make the transition. It was like, oh, it's Nintendo. We all call video game systems Nintendo, especially parents. It's portable. It looks like a Nintendo, but you can take it on the go. Like, everything about the marketing of the Game Boy, I thought was brilliant. Especially, like, I don't know if you guys remember the commercials they used to have.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It's fantastic.
Wait, was that the Play Out Loud campaign back in the day? That Game Boy?
No, that wasn't Game Boy.
Oh, okay, my bad.
It was still, like, now you're playing with power, portable power. Like, that was, like, one of their slogans. It captured people's imaginations. It was very much like the Wii in some respects. I think with the amount of, maybe not the Wii. I shouldn't say that. It was closer to how the DS kind of captured a lot of older people and younger people. It kind of it bridged generations. In the same way that the DS had the Brain Age games and some other stuff that older generations liked. Game Boy had, all they needed was Tetris, and they were able to get that in the hands of a lot more people than they otherwise would have.
Do you know how many games were released on the Game Boy?
It had to be like 900 or something.
Yeah, roughly over 700.
Okay.
It was crazy. And it wasn't just games like Pokemon or Super Mario. I mean, they had games like Final Fantasy Adventure.
I was going to say, one of my favorite Game Boy games of all time, and it's kind of a shame that game hasn't gotten any sort of... I know it was remade at one point, but it wasn't sort of like the original one. I wish they would just kind of re-release the original one, maybe as a Game Boy Color type game.
Yeah, but it's like insane to think that they actually had these epic fantasy role-playing titles available to play on the very first portable system, which at the time wasn't a very powerful system. But also, you made a comparison to the Wii, and the thing like the Wii is the Game Boy actually had a lot of weird accessories, which I never actually got a chance to try out, but there's a link cable.
Yeah, I never got that either. There's light, there's lamps, there's back, you know, there's all sorts of like weird little attachments.
I had lamps. I of course had the link cable because I was a Pokemon player, but you're both chumps. So I never had the pocket sonar, but the Game Boy had so many weird accessories that only Nintendo could come up with. So I don't even, the sonar.
So the sonar, basically, this is the weird thing. So the sonar, from my understanding, was used to locate fish up to 20 meters when you went fishing.
Oh, it, yeah. It's a, it's I don't know, is it, it's like a depth finder, kind of. A fish finder, we would call that, for
people
who do fish here in Minnesota.
I don't think it was released in North America.
No, Japan had a lot of weird stuff.
I never saw that, but that's what essentially it would work like, because there you have these little devices called fish finders that you can put in your boat, and they can, you know, spot, like, movement in the water and stuff like that.
The Game Boy Color got like a weird printer.
There was a camera. It had a camera.
Yeah, and a camera. I remember that.
Camera and a printer, which I think was available worldwide, unlike so.
And for kids out there who are wondering what a link cable is, back in the day, we didn't have internet connection on our portable consoles. So the only way to connect a Game Boy to a Game Boy was to imagine an Ethernet cord that you plugged in to both Game Boys that was probably 3 feet long, maybe not even that long, and that's the only way that you could connect and play all of these multiplayer games, and that's the way you battled and traded in Pokemon, which is what I think it became most notorious for.
Yeah, but I think the Game Boy camera was compatible with the original Game Boy, but the Game Boy printer, I don't think was, because I think you needed the Game Link cable to use it.
There were a lot of exclusive things to the Game Boy Color, and
the camera definitely attached to the original one, the brick. You could put the camera on the brick. I remember that. I remember seeing a kid had one. And you could take these really terrible pictures that were so pixelated. But to us, they were amazing, of course, because back then, cell phones, for one thing, were not now, like the cell phones that people are used to today.
They were so stylized, though. There's something about it that's like cooler than a quality picture, you know?
Yeah. Now it's retro, obviously. But as soon as like phones with cameras came out, like those things.
Speaking of phones, I think it is telling how well the Game Boy did, just in how well Nintendo has owned the market, the portable market, for so long, that the only thing that can really compete with Nintendo in terms of portable consoles, despite how hard Sony might try, is phones in the now differently labeled mobile market. Like, honestly, that's the only space that Nintendo's really getting any pushback from, especially with the Switch now being a hybrid console. I think that without the Game Boy being this enormous success, I do not think that would have happened. Yeah, honestly, without the Game Boy, I don't know if I would be here on this show. It was that personalized portable experience that really got me into gaming and taking adventures like Link's Awakening anywhere I could. That's why I got into gaming, in all honesty.
So a while back on the website, you know, this is when we launched Goomba Stomp, so we're talking about like 3 years ago, we did a ranking of all the video game consoles released. So this is before the Switch. And shockingly, the Game Boy was almost at the bottom of the list. At the bottom of the list was the Virtual Boy. And I think
Game Boy... shame.
Yeah, well, I think there was 15 consoles, and it was in spot number 13.
You know, people are always going to... Obviously, Nintendo improved upon consoles. I mean, it's not a huge surprise to me. The Game Boy is a revolutionary console, but would... If somebody asked me if I'd rather play a Game Boy or a Game Boy Advance or a DS or a 3DS, like, I'm going to pick any one of those later handheld consoles because they had better games on them, too. Like, Nintendo got more adept games. Yeah, they... Look, I'm not saying there are no... Tim, there are good games on the Game Boy, but Nintendo has gotten much better at designing games.
Absolutely true. Everything, of course, iteratively, I think Nintendo has just expanded and evolved. And people always say that a Mario game is a Mario game and a Zelda game is a Zelda game. No way. They've gotten so much better. And some of the changes are just subtle enough that you never notice. But undoubtedly, these games have gotten better and better to the point where forgive me for saying this. The original Super Mario Land is like just a pretty okay game. But yeah, then you look at some of the exclusives that the 3DS had, like Super Mario 3D Land, that was like a 10 out of 10 brilliant piece of gaming.
Now, I will say Super Mario Land 2, 6 Golden Coins, is still a really fun Mario game that holds up even today. Like, they released that on the Wii U, I believe. Or I don't know if it was the Wii U or the
3DS. It was on the Wii.
Or was it the Wii? Or it might have been the 3DS, too.
Super Mario Land 2, I played nonstop. That game is solid. It's a great game. Solid,
and it holds up today as a,
absolutely, as a really, I good still play
Mario platformer. Super Mario Land 1, not as much.
Like, Super Mario Land 2 was the concept of Mario truly brought to the Game Boy in a unique experience.
Yeah, and I miss the rabbit ears. Like, that's a fantastic part. But that whole, the whole like design of that game, all the different worlds and how they were themed, and the overworld map and everything, it was all very, very cool.
So good.
Great game.
That game. I love it.
And Final Fantasy Adventure, fantastic game. Really, that's kind of along the lines of a Legend of Zelda style game, but more mixed with Final Fantasy RPG aspects. And,
Is it Secret of Mana technically a sequel to that?
Yeah, it was kind of supposed to be. It's the same, except that Secret of Mana is multiplayer, so it's like a little bit different. But
You guys are forgetting like the best game apart from Tetris released on the Game Boy.
Link's Awakening.
Yes.
Well, yeah, that goes without saying.
Like,
that
hands down, it is the best game released on the Game Boy. Some people would argue Pokemon Red and Blue. I would put my money on Metroid 2, The Return of Samus, and Link's Awakening, and of course Tetris. Super Mario Land 2, 6 Golden Coins, but there's also, and I don't think you guys have ever played this game, maybe you have, but do you remember the Bill and Ted game?
No, I didn't even know there was one.
No, neither did
I. I'm pretty sure it was just called Bill and Ted's Excellent Game Boy Adventure.
Of course. That makes sense.
So I don't remember much about the game. All I know is I was a huge fan of Bill and Ted, and my friend had the game, and I tried it for like maybe 5 minutes, but there is, I'm 100% sure that my memory serves me correct, there was a Bill and Ted Excellent Adventure sort of like game release for the Game Boy.
Yeah, I played a lot of, RPGs, if I remember. I played all the Final Fantasy Legends, which were kind of difficult, but it was very cool to be playing those games on a portable system. I played a ton of Tetris, but honestly, between Link's Awakening and Final Fantasy Adventure, those are the games that I remember the most, and Super Mario Land 2. Those are the games I remember the most on that system. Anything else? I'm sure I liked other games, but nothing else springs to mind. That's why that's why I'm okay with the Game Boy being kind of down on the console list. It's revolutionary. I was amazed with it, but it's not as good as later stuff.
I think I put it at number 3 best console, probably, if I'm remembering right, when we all did our voting. That game, or that console, just completely shaped all of my video game interests. The two franchises that landed the best with me back then, The Legend of Zelda and Pokemon, are still my two favorite franchises, period. And it's all thanks to the Game Boy, in all honesty. So, it's the best.
Anyhow, that's the Game Boy.
So hopefully we'll get that support on the Switch sooner rather than later. Nintendo, it's turning 30. I thought I almost said 30. Nintendo, it's turning 30. Recognize it. Start putting Game Boy games on the Nintendo Switch Online. That's not too difficult, I wouldn't think. These games are tiny.
By the way, out of all the names for video game consoles ever, except for maybe, TurboGrafx-16 was kind of like a cool name, but I always thought the Game Boy was the perfect name for a video game console.
It's way better than TurboGrafx. I mean, TurboGrafx-16 sounded cool at the time, but when you think about it, Game Boy, from a marketing perspective, is a much better name. It's just so much friendlier to it in all ways.
Yeah, no, I think it was also perfectly in line with that time period. And I think people got it immediately, latched onto it. So if you have had the opportunity to play the Game Boy, we all highly recommend it. Hopefully, again, the Switch gets this support soon. I don't know that we'll ever see a Game Boy Classic Edition, as much as I would adore that. Especially since too many of those games are all too lucrative on their own. Cough, cough, Pokemon. So here's to hoping.
You know what the Game Boy Classic Mini Edition would be? It would be they just release all of the Game Boy games on the Switch and give you some sort of skin that you can put on the Switch so it looks like a Game Boy.
It's a phone case that you put on the front of your phone.
Well, they have it already.
I know. I'm just saying. Happy birthday to the Game Boy. Thank you for all the great memories. But that does it for our show. Thank you guys so much for being here with me and sharing this with me. Patrick, I cannot believe you didn't know that. My show is called Game Boys.
Oh my God, Tim. Is it really? You have another show?
I have another show. It's called Game Boys. My favorite game is Link's Awakening.
God, you know who you should get for that show is Ryan Kapiaski.
Guys, I have a piece of feedback to read just before we do our wrap up. So we got some feedback from a listener who said that this is one of the best video game podcasts, one of the best Nintendo podcasts. We are all very intelligent and it's a very entertaining show. He absolutely loves it. Says he would give us 5 out of 5 stars, but only gave us 4 because apparently we curse. Here's the thing is I always edit out us cursing or I censor it. So if for whatever reason there was a bad word that somehow creeped into a podcast, it was accidental. Because I swear, like, even on the last podcast, I think I like said 2 bad words and I purposely edited them out of the show.
Yeah.
So I apologize in advance. We try to make the show as clean as possible, unless you count like damn it as a bad word. I'm not sure.
That's a bad word.
So, yeah, we try to keep it I would say like PG friendly.
Yeah.
Not necessarily G, because we do talk about stuff like Game of Thrones. Anyways, I apologize. And if you want to leave us a rating or a review, you can always do so on iTunes, Stitcher, or just like leave a comment on our website.
I'm just glad that you said that we were intelligent. Might be the first person that said that about us.
And the last person. Patrick, where can we find you online?
Of course, at GoombaStomp.com. I kind of flip back and forth between, well, I run the Sorted Cinema section, which is, got our movie coverage anyway, the film section. But I also write for the TV and for video games, stuff like that. And you can catch me complaining about The Twilight Zone, which I'll be doing all month, most likely. I'm hoping not, but most likely it's seeming that way now. But yeah, otherwise you can find me on Twitter at Sorted Cinema, of course.
And I would be remiss if I didn't make our obligatory sponsored Detective Pikachu May 10th.
I know. I'm getting primed for that one. I'll be reviewing that one myself.
Oh, man. I'm going to be there. I'm going to try to beat you to the review, and I'm just going to self-publish it without any editor.
All those Avengers fans out there will have to look forward to somebody else reviewing the Avengers, though, because apparently you can't get tickets anywhere anymore. we will have one of the other writers reviewing the Avengers for us.
Maybe I'll do it for you. If I'm feeling generous, because I am going to a Thursday night showing. So Friday would be an easy writing day. Anyway, it's not here or there. Rick, where can we find you online?
So I went to go buy Avengers tickets, and I wanted to buy them online, and the stupid site kept crashing, so I had to run to the movie theater during my lunch break to buy it, and there was this enormous lineup. By the time I got to the cash, all of the shows on Thursday and Friday, and I think they even had a show on Wednesday at midnight, were sold out, so I ended up getting tickets on Saturday. But yeah, totally sold out. They're selling for like $5,000 on eBay. Sell your tickets. Make some money.
Try again later. The thing about movie theaters now is they just keep opening up screens and canceling other shows because they've realized that people just want to go see the one movie. So odds are probable that theaters all around the US and Canada at some point are just like, open up more screens because they're selling.
Yeah, they may add showings. I mean, you're contractually obligated to show certain movies at least.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, they may add showings too, and they may go later and later into the evening if they feel like it.
It's fine. I'm okay with my Saturday evening. Plus, I'm going with a bunch of people, so I can't just buy a bunch of more tickets for a show earlier. Anyhow, you can find me on GoombaStomp. I'm writing about Game of Thrones and video games. I'm actually writing an article about the Game Boy anniversary. That's GoombaStomp.com. I handle the GoombaStomp Twitter account, and that's about it.
And I am Tim Mason. You can find me at Freemason, M-A-I-S-O-N, on Twitter. Check out my other show, Game Boys, mentioned 800 times already, but go do it. We should be back to recording that show any time now. We've had some people moving and no internet connections. But if you are missing the Game Boys and you want to hear at least one of our voices, go check out my enormous ranking of all 21 Pokemon starters, which I spent an immense amount of time on, and very proud of that piece. So I want someone to fight me on it. No one's fought me on it. Everyone's just like, good list. I agree. I'm like, what? No, don't agree. Fight me.
Your list sucks, Tim.
Yeah, thank you. Now where's your evidence, Patrick?
My evidence comes from the fact that I've played two Pokemon games.
You're an expert. What was I thinking?
It's all about Litten.
Hey, he's pretty high on my list. No spoilers here. Go read it. Anyway, thank you so much for being here and listening. You can tune in next week where we're doing our E3 predictions episode. Who's going to get it right this time? Ricky claims to be psychic, and I claim to be a year off because I think it was the year before last that I predicted everything. But it didn't happen that year. It all happened this year. So, yeah, it should be really, really fun. Tune in for that. I love those episodes. And the sky's the limit. Give us a review on iTunes, Stitcher, wherever you listen. If you are on a phone right now, scroll down on your iPhone and hit that little star, man. Give us 5, preferably. Anyway, thanks again for listening. Happy birthday, Game Boy. We'll talk to you more next week with all things Nintendo. We'll see you then.